Now from the KSFR Newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, October 21st.
A proposal to set up a fraud, waste, and abuse hotline for city employees to report suspected improprieties being committed by fellow workers or city officers is being considered today by Santa Fe's Finance Committee. The finance panel will also discuss a plan for the North Central Regional Transit District to provide transportation to and from the Santa Fe ski area. That proposal has been approved by the Public Works Committee and goes before the full City Council next week. New Mexico's Supreme Court takes up the marriage equality issue on Wednesday. The High Court is being asked to provide a statewide binding resolution on the question of whether same-sex couples can legally wed. A number of county clerks have issued marriage licenses to same-sex couples, saying nothing in the state constitution prohibits them from doing so. All 33 county clerks in New Mexico have petitioned for a state Supreme Court ruling. The ACLU of New Mexico says it hopes the justices will issue a writ to resolve all claims on constitutional grounds. The state's Attorney General's Office and the Human Services Department have issued a heavily redacted version of the audit that halted Medicaid payments to 15 providers of mental health and substance abuse services. The release came heading into the weekend and is a response to a suit filed by the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government. State officials had resisted releasing information, saying that doing so jeopardizes the AG's ongoing investigation into the matter. As such, the Attorney General says the full report is exempted from further public disclosure at this time. We'll speak with Attorney General Gary King a bit later as At Noon continues. Tomorrow evening at Santa Fe's Downtown Community Convention Center, Mayor David Koss will deliver his annual State of the City address. The event gets underway at 5 p.m. Tuesday and will spotlight the mayor's appreciation for city workers. This will be the last such speech for Koss, who announced earlier this year he would not seek a third term. Mayor Koss will be joining us by phone in today's At Noon Features segment. Instances of foreclosure and mortgages falling into delinquency in Santa Fe have both decreased by 1% since last year. That according to new statistics today from National Real Estate Data Clearinghouse CoreLogic. As of this past August, Santa Fe foreclosures are at 2.5%, slightly above the national average of 2.3%. Loans 90 days or more in arrears are at 4.4%. The use of solitary confinement in New Mexico's prisons is a topic of discussion at the state legislature's Courts, Corrections, and Justice Committee meetings in the Acoma Pueblo area this week. The agenda for today's meeting at the Pueblo and tomorrow's at the New Mexico Women's Correctional Facility in Grants also includes a tour of the women's lockup. Additionally, lawmakers will hear about a proposal to extend Medicaid coverage to soon-to-be-released state inmates. The city of Las Cruces plans to sue the state taxation and revenue department over its rejection of the city's plan to raise the local sales tax. The Las Cruces Sun News reports the city is contending the tax agency's finding that the city council-approved tax hike just last month doesn't conform to state law. The city approved a 3/8% hike in the gross receipts tax starting in January to offset losses in state funds resulting from new state legislation. The levy increase would bring in more than $4 million by the end of the fiscal year. State taxation and revenue says it can't be fully implemented. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall visits Northwest New Mexico today to discuss economic development, broadband, and energy issues with Navajo Nation and utility officials in the region. One of Udall's stops is the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, where he'll be updated on its efforts to expand internet access. Udall in 2010 helped the authority secure $22 million in funding for a broadband network that covers more than 15,000 square miles in the Four Corners area. The Santa Fe-based Indigenous Language Institute holds a symposium today and tomorrow on motivating youth and children to use their heritage language. The two-day event at Powaki Pueblo features 7 presentations from prominent Native Americans on involving communities to engage and motivate Native youth to use natural idioms. The Indigenous Language Institute, founded in 1992, serves all tribes and individuals working to revitalize Indigenous languages in the Americas. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny and dry much of this week. Today will be cool with the high of only 55. Expect clear tonight with overnight lows in the upper 20s. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at the big board on Wall Street at midday, the indices mixed. The Dow off 11 points at 15,387, the NASDAQ up 2 at 3,917, and the S&P 500 off 1 point. It stands at 1,743. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. The Attorney General's Office in New Mexico has been investigating the operations of 15 mental health and substance abuse providers in our state. An audit given to the state's Human Services Department some months ago resulted in the cessation of Medicaid payments to those entities. Now, the AG's office has released a redacted version of the audit due to its ongoing investigation. Joining us now is Gary King, the Attorney General for New Mexico. Sir, what comments do you have regarding the newly released audit? We know the limited information you've released thus far was in response to a suit brought by the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government.
The issue is whether or not the Attorney General's office is entitled to one of the exceptions to the Inspection of Public Records Act that's called the law enforcement exception, where we would not disclose information that's related to our ongoing investigation as to whether or not there's criminal fraud relating to these 15 providers that are providing behavioral health services. And I think that the Foundation for Open Government and a couple of other media outlets have brought a suit, which I think is their right under the Inspection of Public Records Act, to test whether or not those documents, that audit, is subject to the Inspection of Public Records Act exception for law enforcement records. What we did on Friday is, you know, I think we sat down and tried to comb through all of that information that we had, and even though we believe that it's all covered by the law enforcement exception, we felt like there were additional parts of the document that could be released without endangering the integrity of our investigation. But the parts that are redacted are, you know, the specific allegations that relate to wrongdoing by each of the agencies, and we feel like it's really important for us to be able to carry out our investigation in a way that's, you know, that protects the integrity of the investigation, that protects the institutions for whom the allegations have been made against them. And so what I anticipate will happen next is that in a couple of these cases, the law allows for what's called an in-camera review of the documents by a judge, and the judge will look at the documents and decide whether they're subject to the exception or not. And I have certainly said that if a judge says, no, Gary, you're wrong, I don't think that these are covered by the law enforcement exception, then we'll release them. But if the judge says that we're right and they are covered by the law enforcement exception, then I would expect those media outlets and the Foundation for Open Government to respect that there are important policy issues here in the law, and that the Attorney General's office is doing everything that we can to forward those important policy issues in the way that we're handling these documents.
Any timeline for the investigation being conducted by your office?
Well, it's ongoing. I've added extra investigators. We recognize that this is an issue where time is of the essence, because there are potentially, you know, people out there, certainly the providers who are not getting paid, who are being negatively impacted by all of this, and in some cases it may be deserved, and in some cases it may not be deserved. We have to do our job the best we can, and I think that in order to protect the system overall, that we have to be very meticulous in our investigation. And there are thousands of pages of documents that we that we have to go through, and we're doing our best, but we don't want to make mistakes because those mistakes might have big real-world consequences.
And on another subject, this Wednesday, the state Supreme Court will be weighing in on the same-sex marriage issue in our state. Will you be involved in those proceedings?
Actually, the role that our office has in this, which I think is a very appropriate role, is in this case, the county clerks have filed for what's called a writ of superintendent control, and to find out whether the judge correctly found that the law is unconstitutional, and in which case, if it's found to be unconstitutional, then the same-sex marriages will continue to go forward. In this case, our office represents the judge because it's a writ request against the judge, and so we'll be representing the judge and making the argument that the judge was correct in his finding that it was unconstitutional, and that goes along with our opinion that we issued earlier too. Or actually, we didn't issue an opinion, but we filed a brief with the court in a previous case where we laid out our discussion of the constitutionality of the ban on same-sex marriage.
And an answer from the high court could come quickly, could it not?
I think it could. You know, a lot of cases before the Supreme Court are brought on in the regular, plaintiff versus defendant kind of case, or in this case, appellant versus appellee. This case is brought in a writ action, which is a special action, and so I think that the court could issue their judgment a lot more quickly than they would in a normal kind of case that comes up. So I'm hopeful that the court will make an expedited decision. It could be the same day as the argument. It might be some days afterwards. It'll depend on how much the court feels like they have to discuss amongst themselves what they want to do. But in this case, there have been a couple of previous cases that were brought before the court, and so the issue has been briefed pretty extensively in the court, but they, for various reasons, have sent those decisions back to the district court level. So on this one, I think that there is a real possibility that the court will make a decision expeditiously.
New Mexico Attorney General Gary King, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. We have more of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
The Lensic proudly presents Lions, Elephants, and Giants, an evening with National Geographic photographer Michael Nick Nichols, on Tuesday, October 22nd at 7 p.m. Nichols will discuss his award-winning work with African wildlife and his new book, Earth to Sky. For tickets to see photographer Nick Nichols on October 22nd, call 988-1234 or visit TicketSantaFe.org. The Lensic is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
19 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Tomorrow night at 5 p.m. at Santa Fe's Community Convention Center, Mayor David Koss will deliver his State of the City address. It will be the final such speech for Koss, as he announced earlier this year he would not seek a third term in the upcoming March 2014 municipal election. Mayor Koss joins us now by phone. David, give us an insight into what tomorrow's address represents for you and how you will frame your remarks.
This will be my eighth and final State of the City address, and so we'll look at the last year, but we'll also look at this first decade plus of the new century and how Santa Fe has been doing. I'm very, very proud of this city. I think it's a world-class city, and there's a lot to talk about of how we supported equal rights, immigrants, living wage, bringing our river back, addressing climate change, and becoming doing more renewable energy. And most of all, thanking so many workers, businesses, community groups. I remember Mayor Delgado saying, mayors just can't say thank you enough. And I found that to be very true.
And, Mayor, this will be a bit of a legacy speech for you.
Oh, that's high pressure.
No pressure. But this speech, I would imagine, would have you reflect on where the city stood when you took over from Mayor Delgado 8 years ago and how things have progressed over the course of your tenure.
I think the city's been, I joke a little bit, it took us 400 years to look this good. But we are a great city. We've been continuing to make improvements in city services to really increase the quality of life, and I think the The quality of life in Santa Fe is very high, and that's directly related to how strong our economy is. I don't think you have a strong and growing economy and without good services. So I think we've really worked on that. I think the most important things we've done in this decade is the living wage, supporting the rights of working people, the living river, bringing back the river, the watershed. We see now with climate change that it's more important than ever how we manage water. And then Santa Fe is a place that has stood up for the rights of people. We just led the effort to bring marriage equality, get it done now. Let's not wait a few more years. We want it now. We did that. We've been a city that has stood up for the rights of immigrant people and protected immigrants. So these are some things I'm very proud of that my city does.
David, earlier this year you spoke in vigorous support of Santa Fe's community workforce agreement that would have put city projects costing $500,000 or more under labor union protections. Eventually, however, the city repealed the agreement. Looking ahead, is that something you'd like to see Santa Fe revisit?
Absolutely. I think the city missed an opportunity to work with organized labor to get more people trained and working in Santa Fe. It was a very anti-union type of expression. And I don't think we're going to bring back and restore and maintain a strong middle class without organized labor here or anywhere else in the country. So, I think one of our proudest moments was when our community rallied around the nurses' union at St. Vincent Hospital and made sure that they continued to have a contract. And, it was a low point for me when they just repealed the union ordinance without even trying. So.
And for those presently considering a run for mayor, anything you have to say to the eventual winner?
Well, first, bless them, because it's a lot of work and a lot of effort. So proud of all of them for being willing to take that step forward. You need to rely on the people. You need to stay in touch. You need to be humble and recognize that you're really working with a community that's 400 years old. I just think that is so significant in Santa Fe that we've been here for 400 years.
Have you thought what you might like to do in the future?
Well, I'd like to spend more time with family. My wife and I are making some travel plans. But I'll always be interested in the environment, protecting our environment, improving our environment. Always be interested in workers' rights and human rights. So you'll probably see me continuing to work in that field. But first, I'm going fishing.
The press release for tomorrow's event says it's a show of appreciation and a salute to city workers.
The theme is going to be celebrating and thanking city workers for the wonderful job they've done while I've been mayor. So my talk will be at right around 5 o'clock. And then Manzanatus is going to play afterwards, and we're going to have some food and entertainment and a nice celebration of city workers.
Santa Fe Mayor David Koss, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
25 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Educators across the country and world are stressing the importance of the so-called STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and math. KSFR's Tom Trowbridge joins us once again. And Tom, I understand that a locally produced program is making inroads in these areas.
Yes, Dan, the Santa Fe Institute has developed a program that targets middle school students.
And you have some details on a celebration at the Santa Fe Rail Yard yesterday honoring the Institute.
Yes, Dan, this is a major achievement for the Institute, and here's my story. The Washington-based After School Alliance, which works to ensure that all kids have access to affordable and quality after-school programs, honored the Santa Fe Institute's Project Guts during a ceremony Sunday at El Museo de Cultural. Anita Krishnamurti is the Alliance's Vice President for STEM Policy.
GUTS stands for Growing Up Thinking Scientifically, and this program is very centered in youth development principles, which we strongly believe in is a strong asset of after-school programs, that they make it relevant and exciting and engaging for young people to understand why these fields are important and how they could be applied in real life and really try and make some of that school day learning come alive for them.
Krishnamurti says the Alliance strongly believes that more children need access to after-school programs such as Project Guts.
There's 8.5 million children who are in after-school programs in the country, but 15 million are on their own and unsupervised after school ends every day. And as an organization, our goal really is to try and help there be more such opportunities for communities all over the country. And Project Guts is an amazing example of what after-school programs can be doing, and we wish more such opportunities were available for young people.
Krishnamurti honored the Santa Fe Institute with the Alliance's After-School STEM Impact Award.
And the idea was really to look for after-school programs that were having significant outcomes for the young people that they were serving and could document and record and show us what kinds of impacts these programs are having. And so this was the inaugural year of this award. It was sponsored by the Noyce Foundation, which is based in California. And the award amount is $10,000.
The director of the Santa Fe Institute's Learning Lab, Irene Lee, says Project Guts has been available for a while now.
It started in its earliest incarnation in 2003 as a teacher professional development program. Then in 2007, we went out into schools and offered an after-school program. And momentum's been building. We now offer 30 clubs across the state, and we have a strong partnership with the Supercomputing Challenge.
Lee maintains that the project is important for thinking.
You know, we are surrounded by so many computationally enabled tools and instruments and all our media. And it's good for kids to know something about what happens behind the scene so that they are not just left being end users with no control. We want them to be able to, you know, feel able and confident about going behind the scenes and looking at the code, looking how things are made, perhaps innovating new solutions of their own.
According to Lee, Guts clubs are set up in most Santa Fe public schools, and there are other clubs throughout the state with a concentration in southern New Mexico as well.
The way it works is we have Guts clubs, and in those clubs we have units. And during those units, kids learn about computational modeling in a language called StarLogo. They learn about complex systems that they can model. And there are things that they could care about in their community or want to improve, like traffic flow or maybe a buildup of pollution on their school campus, how to deal with the spread of disease so it doesn't go running through the school. There's a very human component to all of the science, and there's room for students to come up with new solutions.
The After School Alliance Award also recognizes the Santa Fe Institute's efforts to draw students from populations underrepresented in science, technology, engineering, and math fields. For KSFR, I'm Tom Trowbridge.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing our city with fresh, locally grown food year-round.
With autumn upon us, the Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Rail Yard.
On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more.
To learn more, visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com.
Minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Tonight, there's a lecture in the Santa Fe Rail Yard about conservation efforts in the wilderness. Brian Bird of Wild Earth Guardians is the speaker. The event is sponsored by the Great Old Broads for the Wilderness. Carol Johnson, one of the group's leaders, joins us now to discuss. Carol, first of all, tell us about the Great Old Broads.
We're not all great. We're not all old. We are not all broads. There are guys who belong, and they're called bros, and there are younger women, and they're called broads in training. Primarily, we say it's Great Old Broads for Wilderness because we believe in wild places and that they are critical for our mental health, our physical health, our water, our animals.
At tonight's talk, one of the main issues will be off-road vehicle traffic in the wilderness and forest areas. Tell us more about that.
It disturbs animal life, and it disturbs the watersheds. There is a lot of destruction in the watersheds from ATVs, driving across creeks, across hillsides, and these are very fragile areas. And, of course, the noise and the air pollution disturb the animals who live there. That's an increasing problem.
What are the current laws regarding off-road traffic in these areas?
The laws are very, very clear that no motorized vehicles are allowed in wilderness. I mean, not even chainsaws. No trucks, no ATVs. The issue in the forest is that, and the wilderness, is that there's no enforcement. The federal government, the Forest Service, does not have adequate funding to have enforcement. And there are not good signs, there are not good blockades for areas where people have gone in the past.
Any idea how many people are off-roading in our forests?
I don't know, but I know that there are probably close to 3,000 miles of roads and trails that motorized vehicles can and do go on in the Carson. But in the Santa Fe, we already have a travel management plan that came out about a year ago, and there are over 2,500 miles. And if you look at a map of the forest, you'll just see a crisscross of cobwebs everywhere.
And what will Mr. Bird be talking about tonight?
He's going to talk about restoration with regard to motorized vehicles, you know, where roads have been built and caused erosion and sediment in the creeks, and of course, water is a huge issue in New Mexico and everywhere. So restoration on trails and roads is a big, big issue, something we really need to do, but there hasn't been a motivation and funding to do it so far.
And a website where people can go for more information?
Well, we have one for the national organization, which is greatoldbroadsforwilderness.org.
Carol Johnson with Great Old Broads for the Wilderness. Many thanks for joining us today. By the way, that free public event will be held in the conference room in the Rail Yard's REI store beginning at 6 p.m. 12:33 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour. It's time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I'm not a big numbers guy. I'm not even a small numbers guy. In high school, I did okay up until about trigonometry in the vast wasteland known as calculus. Then my mathematical ineptitude started to add up. Notwithstanding my shortcomings, I do find numbers fascinating. I think 10 is supposed to be the perfect number because of Christian theology, 3 times 3 plus 1. Or I might have just made it up. Frequently, I'm not sure of where the boundaries of reality and fantasy might be. My numbers story ends with seeing a UNM bus that was numbered 666. Just kidding. It was bus number 1449. I rode behind and alongside bus number 1449 for a while, but it was long enough to realize that 1 times 4 times 4 times 9 equals 144. Amazing number. Of course, the most important part of your number is knowing when it's up. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Tom Trowbridge, and also to KSFR's Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.